Let me start sharing my notes. The first piece of notes is from our brother, Tom Merton. When I got the invitation from Paul, however long ago it was, I had to take it seriously. Because what the invitation reminded me of was that I loved Tom Merton very much. And that I considered him brother, deep brother. As I considered Martin King brother. And Thich Nhat Hanh, brother. And Sister Mary Luke Tobin, brother. And Julia Esquivel, sister. And so I knew I had to come here. Because the last time that I had seen Tom, was 40 years ago this year in the summer of 1967 there at Gethsemane in his hermitage. And what I was doing there, how I got there, long story that maybe you can make part of your questions if you're interested. And because my brother Tom was, at least as much as anything else, a poet, I want to start with some of his poetry to open up the dialogue. This poetry was quoted by another friend, Jim Forrest, in a biography that he did of Tom Merton. The poem, "We have what we seek. We don't have to rush after it. It was there all the time. And if we give it time, it will make itself known to us." We have what we seek. Second piece of poetry from my dear brother. "If you want to identify me, ask me not where I live or what I like to eat or how I comb my hair." Whenever I read that, I think about Tom and wonder what hair he was talking about. "But ask me what I am living for. In detail, and ask me what I think is keeping me from living fully for the thing I want to live for. If you want to identify me, ask me not where I live or what I like to eat or how I comb my hair, but ask me what I am living for in detail. And ask me what I think is keeping me from living fully for the thing I want to live for. The other introduction to the dialogue actually comes from my new friend, the president of your institution. Because I always like to study institutions where I'm going to be. And I found it very interesting that the president in the catalog for the institution, opening up the institution to all who would possibly come, had written these words. It is my personal hope for you that as an essential and enduring consequence of your Bellarmine learning through the courses described herein, you will become an ever better and more loving person, an ever more fully human being, and an ever more responsible, caring, and effective citizen of the world. And I said to myself, after reading that, this guy is crazy. Colleges are set up to give us certificates so that we can make more money. And here he is talking about this school existing to make us more loving persons, more fully human beings, and more responsible, caring, and effective citizens of the world. And I said, I want to come and see that place. Because they have a strange idea that education is not for certification, but for transformation. And I know that Brother Tom would be at home in such a place, but I also know that Brother Tom would be the one to kick your butts if you didn't live up to this. Because he loved you. So, that's the beginning of my part of the dialogue. There is more. When Paul invited me, I think partly as a kind of seduction. He sent me something that in a way belonged to me that I had totally lost track of. Paul sent me a letter that I had written to Tom on January 1st, 1968. As you know, Paul's job is to keep all these kinds of things related to Thomas Merton. And here was a letter that I had written on the first day of Tom Merton's last year. And I was deeply moved by that. And I was even more fully reminded of how much I loved him. And when I read it again this afternoon, I had to smile about the first line and its reference to time, because it seems to me that there is something about time and me and Louisville and my Roman Catholic community headed by Tom Merton and his spirit. Listen to this. This is the way the letter begins. My dear brother, it was written from Atlanta, Georgia, where we were living at the time. It is now shortly after 2 a.m. on the first day of this strange new year, and I am moved to write to you. I guess I couldn't be with Tom before midnight at any time. Is that what it is about? When I left my all too brief encounter with you and the monastery, I vowed to keep in touch with you. Like so many of my vows, it faded into air and received only token attention, until I finally picked up this morning a piece by you that I had been meaning to read for months. And as I read it, you came continually nearer until you were so close that I could not any longer escape my vow. Your essay reminded me of how immensely glad I felt that day when I walked into your hermitage and found that you too were reading Religions of the Oppressed and seeking for new light beyond our bloody western skies. Here is where I'd like to tell you something that goes beyond manuscript. What I found in Thomas Merton and what helped to bring me here was that this was a man called White who had determined not to let his whiteness become a shield against the pain of the world, nor to let his whiteness become an instrument of overcoming other people, but instead to let his whiteness become a bridge over which people could walk in either direction. And I wondered, as I reviewed this, if that's part of what Bellarmine is teaching about whiteness. For I am deeply convinced that whiteness has to be taught about in this country. We've done a lot of teaching about whiteness in the past and made believe it wasn't whiteness that we were talking about. We called it universality and all of that kind of thing. But now we've got to stop, because our country is in a very, very difficult situation. And Tom speaks to that. And he inspires me with his word that he wrote to me. I am impressed by the fact that my letter, written on January 1st, probably didn't get out here to Gethsemane until any time earlier than the 4th or 5th of the month. But his letter is dated January 16th. He was serious about correspondence. He was living, of course, before the great internet, and so he had to sit and write something, really engage himself in it, not put it into a machine, but put himself into the process. And this is what he wrote that reminds me about whiteness. Dear Vincent, letters as good as the one you wrote New Year's night are hard to reply to. Much easier if you could just dash off an answer to a business letter. Then he goes on, and then he says this. It certainly seems to me that white America is right up a blind alley. This was 1968. The year of death for some powerful people, including Tom Merton. It seems to me that white America is right up a blind alley and under judgment. It is not a situation in which I, for one, can be comfortable. I don't take happily to wrath. Here is what I valued about Tom and what I value about some of my most beautiful white friends. They are willing to look at whiteness in America and look hard at it. They are willing to look at race in America and look hard at it. They are willing to stop talking about, oh, I'm colorblind. Because I say to anybody who says she is colorblind, stop now. I want you to see me. Don't be blind to me. I am one of God's great creations. So see me, and don't be afraid, and don't run aside, but celebrate me, and I will celebrate you, because I am not colorblind. I can never be blind to any of God's creation. And that was Tom, refusing to be blind. Refusing not to see. Some of you may know that Tom, when he was in his 20s, was spending time walking around Harlem, New York, where I was born. This white, middle-class, art-typey guy at the time was spending time in Harlem, partly because he wanted to see, because he insisted on seeing and not being blind. And I was struck by the fact that when he wrote about Harlem, lots of people paid attention to him. And I was most fascinated by the fact that eventually that wild and woolly revolutionary called Eldridge Cleaver of the Black Panthers You remember hearing about them someplace, don't you? Had actually read The Seven Story Mountain. And let me share with you, see, I'm just sharing my notes now, what Eldridge Cleaver had to say about reading Thomas Merton. Now you would find it almost impossible to put those two people in the same sentence. Eldridge Cleaver, Thomas Merton. That's one of the grand things about the possibilities of this country. That if we're willing to really see each other, all kinds of things can go on in the same room. Cleaver wrote in Soul on Ice, "Despite my rejection of Merton's theistic worldviews, I could not keep him out of the room. He shouldered his way through the door. Welcome, Brother Merton. I gave him a bear hug. Most impressive to me was Merton's description of New York's black ghetto, Harlem. I liked it so much, I copied out the heart of it in longhand." People did all kinds of things before there were computers. Can you imagine that? "Later, after getting out of solitary confinement, I used to keep this passage in mind when delivering black Muslim lectures to other prisoners." Thomas Merton being delivered as a black Muslim lecturer. This is the magnificent possibility that we have. When people like Merton let themselves become available to the world, and when we let ourselves explore. I was told today that in one class somewhere, probably echoing many classes, many places, but on this campus, some probably lovely young woman was saying, after the whole issue of race kept coming up again and again, "Isn't it strange that in America, issue of race keeps coming up again and again?" That's America. That's America. The question is, how shall it come up again and again? And she said, "What's wrong with being white? What's wrong with being from an all-white community? What's wrong with being a white farm girl?" And I just wished in my heart that I could have been there when she was saying that, and that I could take the liberty of being 75 and just put my arms around her and say, "Honey, there's nothing wrong with being white. What's wrong is not knowing that that's not enough. That that's only the beginning of your pilgrimage. And if you end there, you have missed all the beauty that God has put in this world in human form." The Quran tells us that one of the major reasons why God created human diversity was so that we could enjoy each other when we discover each other and just enjoy the great creativity of God in making all of these crazy kinds of people. And so I would say, "Honey, don't you want to enjoy God more than just being in one white place all your life?" I take it that Bellarmine exists so that people can know that there is much more to enjoy than we realize. And that part of our sadness is that we don't know that we have cut ourselves off from a part of God by cutting ourselves off from each other. and Tom Merton went through the continuous agony of opening himself to everything and everybody. And I wonder, does he still have anything to teach us here at Bellamy, here in Louisville? I was glad to hear our president reviewing what Louisville had been through, reviewing the fact that for whatever reasons, magnificent reasons, this institution in 1950, in the midst of the 20th century, in the midst of all of America's great declarations in those days about being the leader of the free world, that this institution had to be the first institution in the Commonwealth of Kentucky to open its doors to black people. Almost last opening of my part of the dialogue. When I heard that, I said to myself, 1950, 57 years ago, that's all. I said to myself, children, don't get weary. We've only been walking this way for 57 years. We've still got a long, long way to go, even to learn how to talk to each other. It's one thing to open the door. It's another thing to create the kind of community that's talked about in this document. How are we going to do that? How are we going to move from just sitting in the same seats someplace near each other to the point of really caring about each other, hearing each other, becoming human with each other? How do we do that? I want to suggest that Tom was practicing that. And I'd like to share my last piece of notes with you about that. As I read this wonderful study of Thomas Merton by a friend of mine named Robert Nchusi, I wrote this message about my own feelings concerning Tom and his importance for us all. Yes, my dear brother was poet, monk, public intellectual, and at the same time, he was intrepid, ceaselessly, absolutely determined wrestler with the angels and with the demons, both within and without. He was one of those blessed children of God who was really trying to believe that God indeed loves the world. Not just the American world, not just the Roman Catholic world, not just the white world, not just the people of color world, not just the capitalist world, he was one of those blessed children of God who was really trying to believe that God indeed loved the world, all the world, especially the world in pain, the world in limbo, the world separated from its own best self. And he loved his country. not as a patriot, but as a healer. And I asked myself, what will it be like to return to him after more than 40 years away? And then this note, living the way that he did, writing the way that he did, condemning America's great dependence on military power the way that he did, loving black folks and all suffering folks the way that he did. He was censored by the church that he loved. Censored by the church that he loved because he loved the world too much. Loving it so much that he could not remain silent in the presence of its self-destructive tendencies. Like King, he loved his country so much that he could not resist the call to prophesy. Thomas Merton, as you may have picked up from that first poem that I read to you, did not see this country as a finished product, did not see us as finished products, did not see himself as a finished product. He saw us in process, in process. But he knew that there was, in the midst of our process, some great testimony to the fact that what we were meant to be was already present in us if we would just be courageous enough to claim it. And so I love the fact that one of the last things that Thomas Merton wrote, he wrote in Calcutta, India, meeting together with monks from other religious traditions, especially Buddhist, Muslim, along with Christian monks. And he wrote these words, and these are the words I'd like to make as the last part of my opening of the dialogue, and words that are words of invitation to you for your part of the dialogue. Talking to Buddhists, talking to Muslims, talking in Calcutta, India, October 1968, less than 2 months before he went on his way. He wrote, "The deepest level of communication is not communication, but communion. It is wordless. It is beyond words, and it is beyond speech. And it is beyond concept. Not that we discover a new unity, we discover an older unity. My dear brothers," he said to those who were with him, "we are already one. But we imagine that we are not. What we have to recover is our original unity. What we have to be is what we are." And I heard Howard Thurman, and I heard Hannah Arendt, and I heard Martin King, and I heard Jesus. What we have to be is what we are. Some people thought that this was a sign that Merton was on his way to becoming a Buddhist. Instead, the wise writer of this segment says, no, the entire thrust of the journal by Merton at that time is a call for Buddhist and Christian and Muslim contemplatives to transcend their isolated traditions and to find God in accepting one another fully, completely, and without reservation. I suspect that this was not just for Buddhist, Muslim, Christian monks and sisters, but this was for us as human beings. What would it mean to accept one another fully, completely, and without reservation? Obviously, one thing would mean is that we have to know who we are so that we would not be fooling around with any false goods. I want to accept you, but that means I have to see you. Who are you anyway? Tell me your story. I want to really accept you and not just my image of you. Let me know you without fear. I think Merton was saying all of this to us, and I want to remind you of where I began my comments. We have what we seek. We don't have to rush after it. It was there all the time, and if we give it time, it will make itself known to us. What do you think about all of that? Now is our chance to become truly human.